Everybody knows when George does it, it was done differently. Don't try and be like everybody else. Don't try and keep up with the Joneses. Like, do your own thing. Be your own person. Do it your own way.
Welcome to the Learn It All podcast with your hosts, Learn It CEO, Damon Lemby, and SVP of Product, Darren Bridget. Our mission is to explore how continuous growth shapes the path to success. Our guests are high achievers who've learned there's always something new to discover. They'll share their stories, strategies, and insights with you. So whether you're a budding entrepreneur, a seasoned executive, an aspiring athlete, or simply someone who believes in the lifelong pursuit of knowledge, this podcast is for you. Join us now for the latest episode as we continue the Learn It All's journey through a world that never stops teaching.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Learn It All podcast. If you would like to know why you can and should feel like it's okay to disrupt anything as long as you do it with the right intention, then you have tuned in to the right episode. We are Damon Lemby, the CEO of Learn It, Darren Bridget, the Chief Learning Architect at Learn It, and we are joined today by George Andriopoulos. George is the CEO of Launchpad 516, management consultant, and a fabulous public speaker with a new company called Speak that he's going to get into. George, welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys. So psyched to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
I know this is a personal sort of pick for Damon because he had a particularly great experience with you that he can't stop talking about that we'll get into a little bit later. Before we do, George, can you give us a little bit of your background? You know, dilate a little bit more on just, management consultant, CEO.
Yeah, absolutely. So first and foremost, I'm a husband and father of four. That is my most important job. My company, Launchpad 516, my baby, it's kind of where all of this started originally in my career. It came from the pharma industry in what I call act one of my career. And I took what I learned there, business turnaround, foundational business practices, and I took that into the consulting world to help businesses build strategy, fix problems that they have. And so I launched Launchpad 516 back in 2013. Super proud that we just celebrated our 10th anniversary this past December, which was mind-blowing. But yeah, that's afforded me the opportunity to do a lot of stuff as an entrepreneur. I'm an entrepreneur at heart. And so I grew this consultancy, which basically our mission is to give individuals and organizations the resources to succeed and thrive. Through that, we did a number of things. We started a digital marketing agency, a podcast production company, leadership coaching division of the company, and then some failed endeavors as well. And that led to a couple of years ago where myself as a public speaker and a couple of my buddies, we moved as a hobby from producing TEDx events to founding our own global public speaking platform called Speak. And, you know, we've kind of been doing all of this ever since, and we've been having a blast at it.
George, it's great to have you here. So as Darren touched on a little bit, I first met George through a mutual connection, Frank King, who is a previous guest on our show. Darren, we had a good time with Frank. Yeah. And I was honored and came out to Farmingdale and was a speaker at a Speak event. And it was a fantastic opportunity, great learning opportunity, and I really, really got a lot out of it. And so my question to start off with, George, is what inspired you to launch Speak? And how is it different from other, because I know there's a lot of platforms out there.
Yeah, so I won't get too in the weeds on it, but the short version of the story is that I'm a public speaker. As I built Launchpad 516, as a matter of just growth, I got onto stages, right? I wanted to show my expertise as a business strategist, as a turnaround expert. And so I did that. And a couple of years into it, I found that I wasn't connecting or engaging with audiences the way I liked. And so I wanted to learn more. I wanted to be better. And I also, you know, me being endless overachiever, I wanted to get to the top of my game. So I saw TED Talks and I said, if I'm going to be anything in this world, I have to do a TED Talk. So I secured my first TEDx talk back in 2018. I did it. I learned so much from it. I wasn't a huge fan of it, but I'm trying to not be super hard on myself these days. And, you know, I learned from it. I did another one. And then I had an opportunity through another event that I was a part of where I was coached really well to learn the other side of it, to learn the producer side of this event. And I said to myself, you know what, if I want to become a better speaker, maybe I should get behind the minds of other speakers, show them what I know, learn what they know, and kind of grow from it. So I applied for a TEDx license, which was TEDx Farmingdale. And, you know, here we are years later, we executive produced 4 TEDx Farmingdale shows. I co-produced 2 TEDx Women shows. But, you know, through the years of doing that, I enjoyed it so much. It's a thankless job, you know, doing an endeavor like that. And, you know, you kind of observe things that you feel this is somebody else's business. So I'm looking at it and go, you know what? I think I could do this better. I think, or, you know, certain parts of it I can do better. I think that these people offer something that's great, but there's a gap that maybe we could build something of our own to fill that gap and do this in a different way. So, you know, TED is ideas worth spreading. We were more interested in storytelling and people sharing their impactful stories without the sort of weight of having this big, you know, innovative idea behind it. Maybe sometimes it's just an important story and a lesson they learned. And here we are, we can share this lesson with people in an engaging way and change the world through that. So Speak happened that way. Speak was rewinding a little bit. I moved into my current office space in late 2016. It's a big open space, very Google-esque loft office. And I looked at it and I said, back in 2016, I want to do a monthly speaking event here. And I'm going to call it Speak. I came up with the name in 2016. And then I walked away from it. I said, let me wait. Let me see how this public speaking thing goes. And I grew it and I grew it and I grew it. And then when it was time to sort of look deeper into this new thing that we could build to fill the gap, I said, this is what Speak is supposed to be. So I started conceptualizing it. And it took me a solid year, you know, from when I announced that my last TEDx show was coming up in 2022. This was after our 2021 show. It took me a while. And about halfway through it, I brought on 2 partners, Fred Banny and Jason Martin, who were co-producers of mine on my TEDx shows. And November 2022, we launched this thing. And, you know, we haven't looked back since.
How many events have you done in the last couple of years? And what do you got scheduled for the future?
Yeah, so our foundation is built on what we call pop-up events. So these are events that happen all over the world. They're typically 10 speakers at these events. They could be produced by us, or they could be produced by an outside producer that applies for a license to produce a show with us, which is something we rely on in order to scale this company. We have done so far 18 pop-up events in multiple states across the United States in 2 countries. We went to Northern Ireland, to Belfast last October, which was such an incredible experience. And we have a ton of shows scheduled coming up for the rest of this year, plus a European tour that we are putting together right now that is happening in Ireland, in Northern Ireland. It looks like London, England. It looks like Greece. It looks like Germany. So we could be hitting 5-ish countries within this tour to take our grand total to, you know, 6 or 7. So, yeah, and of course, this whole thing, the crux of it every year is an annual main stage show, the first of which is planned for spring of 2025. So our goal, our big, hairy, audacious goal is to do this at the theater at Madison Square Garden. And, you know, we're trying to make this thing happen. So keep supporting us. Wish us luck.
That's awesome. So I have a question. Of all of the speakers that you had at Speak, who was the best one, and was it Damon?
I think it was this guy Damon Lemley. Yeah. Well, everybody is so unique. That has been the most magical part of doing this thing is you know, you look at speakers and it's kind of our instinct to rate things, right? To go, okay, this one's going to be the best, this one's going to be the worst. And every lineup of 10 or so speakers, you go, we just had 10 incredible stories. I'm very simple when it comes to leadership. It's a matter of raising your hand and saying, I'll do it. That's my definition of leadership. And so if that talk that Damon did or that anybody did can reach one person and affect one life, that's it. I don't care about the rest, right? Like that was worth it. We had a talk that was done at our very first event, November 17th, 2022, Speak Beginnings, started right here in Farmingdale. You know, we made sure that our first event was in our hometown. And we had this guy, Mark Fujiwara, who came in from San Francisco, I believe. He told an incredible story about mental health and the journey that he's taken. And subsequently, he had asked us permission if a film crew could come with him because he was part of a documentary called Big Stages, about the journey of these four, I believe it was four speakers, from beginning their journey as public speakers to making it onto big stages. So Speak was actually featured in this documentary and Mark's journey. And we went this past October to the Tribeca Film Festival to see the premiere, which was just crazy. Like, I couldn't believe that I was in this world. And I saw Mark after the event outside the restroom. And he gave me the biggest hug. And he said, I want you to know that this talk has saved the lives of three people that I know, he said to me. He shared that talk with three people that he was contacted about that were struggling. He shared the talk and it was the beginning of their healing. So this is why we do this thing. I mean, I'm a business guy. Look, I want any of my businesses to be successful, but if you're not out there doing something big and important, what are you doing?
What I like about the event I was at is I would say, or I participated in, there was 10 of us, and I would say 80-90%, 8 or 9 public speaking, this was something pretty new for them, you know, for all of us, really. And I think it takes so much courage for somebody who doesn't have a lot of experience doing that, you know, to get out there, stick their neck out there and do it. And that's what I thought was so great about Speak, was giving individuals, just the everyday people who may want to get into public speaking, the opportunity to do so.
Yeah. Yeah, it's important to us. Part of our mission is to amplify both adult and youth voices all across the globe. So it's important to us, for somebody that never would take a stage before, to get up on that stage and for us to give them those tools, you know, because we coach our speakers through the whole process, for us to give them the tools added on to their story, right, and create impact that way. It's the ultimate collaboration, right? So Damon came to us with just such an incredible story. The first time I met him, I'm like, yes, we need to hear the story on here. And he knocked it out of the park. Yeah. Sorry for the baseball metaphor, but he knocked it out of the park. It was incredible. But there are other people that have never taken a stage before that have been coached through this, that now walk out of here as public speakers. That's huge to us. I had the honor of, for our first, I don't know, 10 or so shows, to be the person that actually coaches the speakers through the process. And then that transferred over to my partner, Fred, the builder. And he's the one that worked with Damon. So it's, you know, we're both so fulfilled when we do this kind of work with the speakers.
Fred's awesome. I might get to him a little bit later. One more question while we're on this is, I love the topics, you know, it's belonging, it's identity. What's the thought process behind the topics you come up with?
It depends on if it's an internally produced event or an external event. When a producer applies to produce with us, it's, you know, they are, the decision is made based on their experience producing events, their experience coaching speakers, and of course the idea for their theme. So we have simple, usually one word themes, beginnings, resilience, growth, family, you know, grief, anything like that. So as long as it speaks to the producer and they have a connection with that theme and they can explain to us why it's important to them, we're willing to take on any theme.
So much of what you do sounds like it's purpose driven. You know, I mean, you're clearly out there wanting to make a difference with it. And that's your satisfaction out of this a lot, which reminds me of your Jerry Maguire moment in terms of how you came into this in the first, and that's really how you got started with Launchpad 516. Can you tell the listeners about your Jerry Maguire moment? For those who don't remember, you might need to tell them the movie too.
Yeah. So, you know, no stolen valor on this. Like, this wasn't always me, right? I was the first, you know, I call it act one of my life and career. I was the biggest asshole you've ever met, right? I was, you know, huge ego, you know, so full of myself. Thought I didn't need anybody else, thought I was the best at everything I did. I just gave a talk about this. I have this Facebook memory that pops up when it was at the pinnacle of my pharmacy career. I don't delete the post, even though it pains me, but it pops up every June and I get to read, you know, the genesis of this like complete asshole. and the post is, I say, hey guys, you know that feeling when you walk into a room and you just know that you are better than everybody else at the room at what you do? That's me in every room I'm in throughout my whole life. And my friends let me have it in the comments. Read the comments. It's like, you're an asshole. What's wrong with you? Blah, blah, blah. And then I go, guys, I don't think you understand. I'm saying I'm better than you. This was my actual post, right? So, you know, that led to the ending that it should have had with everything collapsing, right? Life, career, the whole thing. And when I started over and realized, oh, okay, it's me, right? I'm the problem. I think this is a Taylor Swift song. It sounds like, you know, and I focused on being a dad to my two kids. I was newly divorced. I just wanted to be a dad. I wanted to be a good man. I wanted to find me again, find George, because he was totally lost. I didn't recognize myself. And through my partner at the time, that's now my wife, and my kids and all the people around me, I sort of found that guy again, fixed interpersonal relationships, and something was missing. I felt like, I always say I felt like 80% of myself. And what was missing was I took time off of work, right? I left the pharma industry. I didn't know what the next step was, and I couldn't sustain that very long. Money was running out. So I had to start working, and I decided that I would use the expertise from part one of my career, but leave the pharmacy industry because I didn't really want that anymore, and build this thing. And if I was going to do it, it couldn't be about the money this time. Had to just be about being a person of service, right? So I did that, and things really started firing on all cylinders. The business started becoming successful. And this one moment, I was working in my office late one night, and I thought of, I don't know why it popped in my head, I thought of the movie Jerry Maguire, which was with Tom Cruise, where he plays a sports agent, successful sports agent. And one night after a chance meeting with the son of one of his clients who had gotten tremendously hurt, and a bad slice of pizza, he grew a conscience and he started writing his personal mission statement, which blew up his whole life. Got him fired because he wrote things like, the answer is less money, less clients, you know, more love, more caring, you know, loving what you do. And ultimately, it led to his eventual success as the version of himself that he wanted to be. So I started writing this thing for myself. And the title of his mission statement, and you could Google this and get a PDF copy, it was The Things We Think and Do Not Say, The Future of Our Business. So I got a copy of that. I ripped the title page off and I put it on mine and I just started writing it. And I wrote about 35 pages of what would be my mission statement, what I was about, what I wanted to do. And that kind of sparked the next level of growth for me, for my business, for my life. It's where I kind of discovered, you know, the balance in my life is what made me who I had become today, being a person of service and not caring about success or the dollar or status or whatever, that would give me those things that I always wanted without asking for them, without wanting them anymore. And that's kind of where the genesis of the whole thing started.
Love that. George, you had me at hello with that story. I wish that we could bottle up some sort of pill to help anyone who's an asshole, you know, kick the habit. Because yeah. It's not, I mean, that sort of level of awareness and self-reflection isn't easy, and it requires such a giant change in your life.
Yeah.
It can't have been easy in the beginning.
It wasn't. It was very hard because there was a trust that was sort of betrayed from the people that knew that person. Then now it's like, oh, you're becoming this person. What is this, a facade? And to explain to them, like, no, this is the first time there's no facade. It's always been a facade. That was never me. That was me being whoever I needed to be in that moment, right? Now it's not a facade anymore. I really could care less about any of this stuff. I know how to earn that dollar. I'm very good at it. But it's not driving me anymore. My kids are driving me. My wife, you know, now I have four kids, right? And it's like, they're the center of my world. And somehow I still maintain my, you know, what I consider success. That, you know, being able to support my family, being happy, doing these really fun things that I get to do at the office every day. And that's success for me.
So George, that really reminded me of something. You know how you run into people who are constantly comparing themselves to others all the time, and they're always worried about, well, this person has that, I don't have this. And it sounds like for you, you just kind of gave that all up and said, I'm not even going to worry about that anymore, right? What advice do you have for individuals who are constantly comparing themselves for other? Because for me, it's like, I look at, I don't do that. I don't really care. You know, if I go to dinner and somebody's going on and on about what they have or whatnot, I'm like, good for them. I'm not going to compare that to what I got or what anybody else has. What advice do you have for people who get all, you know, wound up about that?
Yeah, there's an old saying that says comparison is the thief of joy, right? Comparison for me, because it's what drove me always, was the thief of everything in my life. It caused all of the problems. So now it's like, yeah, like you said, like somebody shares something with you. My old instinct was to share with them something that was like a little bit better than what they just shared with me. That happened to me, right? Like that was like that. It was a reflex every time. Now it's like, no, I want to experience your joy. Tell me what's going on with you. And I will just sit here and be so happy for you and support you in any way that I can. Having that mindset put me in the place where I could truly not give a shit about why do you have this nice car when I don't, right? Why do you have this nice house when I don't? And those things came to you. They came to me anyway, just because of the success that I had, you know, with my business and everything that I was doing. But you know, I'm not out there driving a Lamborghini. Like I have a 2016 Chevy Tahoe that I love. My favorite truck I've ever owned, and it's great, and it gets me everywhere where I have to go, and that's it. I don't need that nice car, right? Like I don't, you know, I have a house that is beautiful and I love, and it's not a mansion, and that's fine. It's all I need. So, you know, when you kind of take that into account, comparison is the thief of joy, and realize that it's more than joy that it takes from you. Realize how comparison hurts other people, right? Like in those relationships, how good of a friend can you be when your friends are sharing with you their victories, and then all you do in response is share another victory that you had, instead of just being there and saying, amazing, I knew you could do it, so proud of you. That's kind of the beginning of it. You know, everybody's journey is different to kind of getting to that point. And I'm still figuring it out. I still have my asshole days. I won't lie. You know, it's I'm a recovering asshole. I'll be in recovery for the rest of my life, right?
Well, so, right?
Yeah, I'm a New Yorker. So it is my God-given right to be an asshole too. So, but you know, and I think that's a line from Ghostbusters, by the way. But yeah, it's one of those things where you can kind of reset. I talk about this thing in my coaching practice called the balance phenomenon, which is when you can be the same person in every area of your life, in work, at home, in your community, in your volunteer work, whatever. If they all see the same person, you don't have to put on a persona. That's the balance, right? That's the balance. So, and balance by definition means that you constantly have to balance. Like it's never perfect. There's never you balance it and it just stays there. It's going to go out of whack. You know, as long as you're listening constantly and you can actively fix or work on the things that you need to rebalance, eventually you'll find center again. You know, my wife and I have this conversation a lot where I am with the right person. She will call me out when I'm out of balance and like, hey, dude, like, listen, you need to be home more or you need to be working less or whatever. And it's like, done. I heard you. Let's go. Right.
George, I wanted to pivot over to this idea of disruption. Actually, I think it kind of connects a lot to what you're saying, because disruption is something that you've embraced in your own life. And I think you're embracing it in terms of the ways you're approaching businesses moving forwards, how you're working with management, consulting with your clients, how you're approaching speak. But yeah, can you say a little bit more about your take on disruption, which was so like everybody is excited to disrupt with Silicon Valley. And I feel like that word has almost become like kind of a dirty word. How do you think about it? How do you mean it?
Yeah. So I'm the kind of guy that wants to do it different than anybody else. And sometimes it's ass backwards, right? Like sometimes I'll, you know, so sometimes I'm going to go from, you know, New York to Boston via Florida, right? Like, and just go the wrong way and take too long to get there. But most of the times I'm trying to be strategic about something when I want to do something in a different way that makes my product stand out, whether it's my client's work, whether it's my work, something I'm doing for myself, something in my community. I'm always, everybody knows me knows when George does it, it was done differently. You know, I try and get, it's one of the, I have one son and three daughters. I work with my son every day. He's at this pivotal age, he's 13 turning 14, where I want him to just get it. I want him to understand, don't listen to everybody. Don't try and be like everybody else. Don't try and keep up with the Joneses. Like, do your own thing, be your own person, do it your own way. So when it comes to consulting, you know, we started as a management consulting firm and I was looking to the big six out there, the Bain, McKinsey's, you know, all these companies to kind of be the model of like what I wanted to do on a very small level, by the way. We are tiny, tiny compared to them. But it was boring. It was like, I came out of this place of, you know, when I was in the pharmacy world, I loved the business of it. That's what excited me. I got bored with the clinical end of it. It's why, you know, it's why I didn't want to do it anymore. And so am I going to be the management consultant that does it the exact same way as one of these big six consulting firms? But by the way, they do it a million times better than me and they have a million times more firepower. No, I have to differentiate myself. So we started going in different directions, right? You come in, you're not the guy with the spreadsheets and the KPIs and all of this stuff, which you need. No, I'm the guy that speaks to everybody. It starts with people for us, right? So if I go into a company to consult, I'm interviewing every single employee from the janitor to the CEO because I want to hear, what do you think of this company? What is right? What is wrong? What could be better about it? What do you like about your job? What are your personal goals? What are your professional goals, right? That company that hires me to fix something going on with their employees, right? That disconnect, typically it's a two-way street. I'm just opening up lines of communication. And I'm saying, hey, day one, you hired this guy because you thought he was the perfect fit and he could add value to your company. You started working for this guy because you thought this culture here and this environment was perfect and that you could thrive here. Where did we diverge since day one? Let's get back to that day one mindset to get creative here. And so we started realizing that we can consult in a different way, you know, different solutions, not just, you know, here's a strategy plan, here's a business plan, here's a marketing plan. Hey, you know, let's get you out there as thought leaders. Let's start a podcast for you guys. Let's do this, let's do that. So I started calling it Consulting Plus, right? It's more than just management consulting, it's different. If you're looking for a straight up management consultant, that's not me, right? We're gonna be a little more innovative, a little bit different. So that's that business. You know, Speak is the same thing. It's we're trying to turn the whole thing on its ear and give people an opportunity. And even those ones that want to reach that elite status as speakers, we want to give them that opportunity where they might not be afforded that opportunity with TED platform because their speaking style or their subject matter doesn't fit the ideas worth spreading thing. So everything I do, I try and really look at it from all different angles, all different perspectives in order to do it in a way that'll really stand out and be different. Innovation via disruption. That was the impact of innovation via disruption was the title of my first TEDx talk. And it was about business and my personal life and how I disrupted who I was in order to innovate and create impact that way.
That's great. I almost have this sense that like business as usual is that almost kind of leads down that asshole path if you're not careful. And the willingness to like just step back and kind of break some things in terms of your perceptions and how you're just operating in a daily way. You have to be willing to do that sometimes or you're just going to be stuck in that rut. We had a question here from somebody. I don't know if you're how much you want to share this or not, but it was bitter experiences during your tenure at a consulting firm. Now, to be clear, you weren't working at McKinsey or Bain or one of those big organizations. You were in pharma, but I know you've worked with a bunch of different organizations. Maybe like, you know, what are some of the things that you maybe have seen that you wish just weren't the case, that people could do better?
Yeah. So we've all seen those fix it shows, right? You know, Bar Rescue, The Prophet, all these kind of things, right? 9 times out of 10, the ownership or the management of the problem there. So when I go into a company and I hear ownership or C-suite or management that says, we want to learn how to better support these people to be more successful, it's like half the job is done. You're like, this is great. Let's get to work. We just cut out the first 3 weeks of the consult. We're good. Let's dive in right now. 9 times out of 10, that's not the case. Because it's like, hey, my employees suck. Fix it. Mm-hmm. And then you go, wow. Yeah, all right, no problem. Let me look around. Let me do my discovery. And you come back and you go, well, you know, I got something to tell you. You suck. You know, let's fix you first. So that's the biggest thing. Like, we're in a new age of business now, guys. This is not, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago when I started in my professional journey, where it was cut and dry. Like, this is how business works. This is how employees work. You don't fit, you're out. Right? Like, this is a different world. There's no such thing as the prototypical employee anymore, the standard work culture or anything, you know? You have to be able to evolve through that. So if I could put one word on what I look for out of the ideal client is evolution. The willingness to evolve is so important. If I didn't evolve as a small business owner, now, you know, the owner of a global speaking platform, I never would have gotten, I would have been out of business years ago, because the world changed. And I started Launchpad 516 in 2013. 2024 is a completely different world. And by the way, it's changed like 3 times over since I started. So if we didn't evolve in that time, we would have been gone years ago. It's those companies that are not willing to accept accountability and the companies that are not willing to evolve that you go, I can't help you. And, you know, luckily I'm in the place in my business where, and it hurts to do this, but where I can look at a client and go, yeah, we're not a good fit. You know, yeah, okay, this may be a great consult. This may be big money, but this is not a fit because it's not going to go well in the end. You know, the deliverables won't be there. And ultimately it's going to affect my reputation and it's wasting their time, right? It's wasting their time and money.
So we talked about this prior to coming on the show. You had a recent success, or I should say your son had a recent success when you won the basketball championship. And you said you had a good story to share with us.
I did, yeah. So a couple that stem from this. But so when Damon and I were working together on Speak, I think we either had a meet and greet or a virtual rehearsal that I had to miss because my son had a basketball game. I'm not only the commissioner of PAL basketball here in our hometown, but I'm the coach of his 7th, 8th, and 9th grade boys team. I love coaching for a number of reasons, because now that they're older, I followed him since kindergarten coaching. So now that they're older and there's, you know, real talent there and the kids are starting to get bigger and it's really competitive now, it's fun to take a raw group at the beginning of the season of all different kids from all different backgrounds, socioeconomic backgrounds, races, cultures, whatever, and turn them into a unified team. When I first started coaching, my daughter's basketball team, who's older than him, and then my son's, I played this game with the kids in kindergarten called Scrambled Eggs. I invented it. Scrambled Eggs was where I had the whistle. They would run around the court like maniacs. And then when I blew the whistle, they would freeze. And I would pick one kid to pass to, and they would have to shoot from exactly where they were. The point of the game at the younger age was fun, but also situational awareness. Don't go somewhere where you can't shoot from, right? You shouldn't be at the half court line. You shouldn't be past the 3-point line. I, in some way, shape, or form, I play this game every single year. So we had a very talented team this year. We built. We were winning games, but there were some tough teams out there. And so the personalities on the team that were tougher to sort of wrangle in, but really talented, they really started to get there and they started playing as a unit. We won. We had a bye in the first round of the playoffs. We won the semifinals. We made it to the championship. So we had a practice before the championships. A couple of the kids on the team were, it was really tough for them to understand to play in a certain kind of way. I had this one kid who's a big kid, probably my size, 6'1", but for, you know, 7th, 8th, and 9th grader, he's like a center, right? He's like a Shaquille O'Neal. He's bigger than everybody else. But in actuality, you know, he's the size of a point guard, you know, or shorter than in the NBA. So he's playing like a point guard, but I'm trying to teach this guy the whole season, you're a big man. You need to play like a center in this particular game. It was a tough transition for him. So because he tries to be a shooter, even if the kid was 2 feet away from the basket, he wouldn't do it as a forceful layup. He would take a jump shot from 2 feet from the basket. And he'd go, no, easy lay-in. It's always going to go in. Look for the square up there. It will go in every single time. So we played scrambled eggs for the last half hour of our practice right before the game. Now I'm under the basket, blowing the whistle. They're playing, half the team is playing defense against the other team. So they're just kind of like running around playing defense on each other. But same thing, I blow the whistle, pass the ball, they shoot the basket. This big kid, once he got under the basket, I'd pass him the ball. He'd shoot his jump shot, he'd miss. That player has to get the rebound, give it back to me. Then they start moving again. I immediately blow the whistle again, pass it back to him, jump shot, he misses, gets the rebound, pass it back to me immediately. So he's not getting anywhere away from the basket. I did it 15, 20 times in a row until that jump shot turned into a layup eventually. Then I would catch him a few minutes later in the same position over and over and over and over again. Bottom line is we destroyed the other team. I think we won by like 25 points. This kid must have had 30 points in the game. And almost every one of those points was an under the basket easy layup. Right.
Love it. So
this stuff that I developed when they were so little, for it to correlate 8 years, 9 years later, it's crazy to me. I love it.
That's awesome. I love that story. So much of what you're talking about, it feels like going back to this idea of disruption, it's having the courage to jump in and try things in a new way. And that there is kind of a better version of you, of your organization out there, if you're willing to step back and look at it and kind of do it for the right reasons. And there's a ton of creativity that you're bringing to all these stories that you've talked about, because it's the courage to try something new, but it's also just that creativity to come up with your game, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Creativity is at the center of everything I do. I try to be creative. When I'm not in a creative space, I know that it's not going to be George, right? So those are the moments where I have to walk away and go, all right, I need to find the space that I need to be in, the headspace, in order to do this job the right way.
Yeah. You had another story I wanted to hear about before we go. This mistakes equals practice. And I think this is apples and peaches thing that I've heard you talk about a little bit more. Can you share that story, that idea?
Yeah. So so this came from my first TEDx talk, which I mentioned, which was called The Impact of Innovation Via Disruption. So this was about disrupting the way we think about things in order to create impact, to innovate and create impact, right? So what I did during this talk was I used a slide. It was a picture of an apple. And I would tell them at the beginning of this talk, I'd say, every time you see this slide come up and I point at you, you say, this is an apple, right? The entire audience in unison. Now, the theme of it was mistake equals practice, right? Like, I'm going to innovate my life. I'm going to disrupt my life and innovate it by knowing I've made a bunch of mistakes, but knowing that was just practice for when I actually do it the right way. Right? I'm doing it wrong 1,000 times, so that the 1,001st time that I do it right, but I do it really right, where I don't need to do it again. I innovated it. So throughout the talk, it's 1, 2, 3, 4 times, you know, first 1 minute, 3 minute mark, 7 minute mark, whatever. Point at them, this is an apple. So then a picture, but I'm also showing them a picture of an Apple computer and an Apple iPhone and Apple Martin, the daughter of Chris Martin and Gwyneth Paltrow. And the New York skyline, the Big Apple, right? So all of these things are apples, but we don't necessarily correlate them as, when we say, what is an apple? We're going to say it's this thing. So then I show another picture of a fruit, which happens to be a peach that looked just like the apple. And I pointed them, they say, this is an apple. I go, no, this is a peach. But you have been trained to think that this thing is the only thing out there that can be an apple. But that's okay, right? We're going to regroup now and we're going to learn because this is a mistake. We're going to learn from this and make it better. So the, you know, the whole point of the talk was just kind of getting people to understand, don't worry about the mistakes, right? As long as they're not big enough to screw up everybody's lives around you, like, don't worry about it. Like, learn from it, get better. Everything I've done in my career, I've been a sponge. So I'm learning not just from the successes, but my mistakes, other people's mistakes, in order to make me better at what I do. And not only just work, but being a father, being a husband, being a human being, being a man. These are all things that I want to learn in every moment of my life and make it better. The best part about that was I did that talk, you know, production value of that TEDx event wasn't great. I didn't love my delivery of the talk. I loved the talk itself. I didn't love the delivery of it. And I put myself down so much about it. I couldn't even watch the talk for the first year. Lo and behold, this thing that I thought was such a big mistake wound up in a book called The 100 Greatest TED Talks on Innovation, featured my horrible first TEDx talk. Wow. You know, so it was like, you go, yes, this is what the whole talk was about. You know, this is why. So yeah, I love that story.
I think it's great. And we'll, if you don't mind, we'll include it in the show notes for people to watch. And I know we're running up on time, but I want to get back to speak before we ask our final signature question, because I think this is important. I know that speak is looking to work with companies to come on site and help organizations and do pop-up or on-site speak events. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So outside of the regular speak program where we do our shows and the pop-up events and the main stage shows, we have a couple of fee-based programs that work with either higher education or private companies. One is called Speak Higher Ed and one is called Speak at Work. Effectively, all we do is we come into an organization and we put on a speak event for their organization, whether it's part of their annual conference or whatever, they do it as a one-off event. But the thing about it is we don't bring in our speakers. We procure speakers from that organization or from that university when it's Speak Higher Ed. We procure them. We work with them to procure 10 speakers. We then coach them on writing their talk, delivering their talk on stage, rehearsals, the whole thing. We produce the show. They just provide the venue and whatever else we produce and record it. We'll MC the show. But what we're doing is we're trying to showcase the thought leadership within an organization by giving them the tools to get out there and show that thought leadership in a different way on a stage, which is something that they may not have done before or may not have ever had the thought of doing. What does that do? It identifies emerging leadership. It establishes trust for newer leadership. It builds culture within an organization. It's such a cool program. We're so excited about the future of Speak at Work and being able to do this at conferences and for organizations all over the world.
Thanks for sharing that. I really agree with that. And for all you listeners out there who run a team, run an organization or small business, I think it's something you should seriously consider doing. I'm thinking about trying to coordinate something maybe later in the year for, I think it'll be a fantastic opportunity for the Learn It team. As we wrap up, I mean, George, you've been an open book, which is awesome. One of our signature questions is, can you share with us something about yourself that maybe people don't know too much about or don't know at all?
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. So probably the easiest thing, you know, when I tell people that part one of my career was in pharma, they usually don't see it. But when I was a kid, my aspiration was to be a cartoon artist. That was it's always been a passion of mine, drawing and cartooning. And it's what I wanted to do for a living. I wanted to be a comic book author. I wanted to draw comic books. I wanted to be a cartoonist, do my own comic strip. So I've had a couple of opportunities in my professional career to be in the position to illustrate a book that I've done quietly, just because it's a hobby of mine. It's a passion of mine. But yeah, that's something that people definitely don't know about me.
That's a great.
Yeah. And by the way, the book that I illustrated was it was co-written by a renowned sex therapist and a duo that invented an algorithm for matching people dating. like a dating algorithm, and it was called Instant Chemistry. I think that was the name of the book too, but yeah. So I was the illustrator of that book.
That is such a good answer to that question. And it just shows there's a lot more to explore with you. George, we've only just scratched the surface. I don't know what movie that's from, but it's got to be from something.
It's got to be from something.
George, so much. Thank you for the day. I think I'm going to start looking for my own Jerry Maguire moments out there. And to anyone who is wanting to be a recovering asshole, I'm sure you'll enjoy this episode. And I hope you get the chance to tune in for it. George, thank you so much. Really appreciated having you be here. To our listeners who tuned in today, thank you for joining us. If you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe, tell your friends, and until then, remember to stay curious and keep listening. Keep learning. That's the one. I'll get it right one of these days, Damon.
But Darren, before we go, you already did this, but George, where does our audience, where do they connect with you at?
Yeah, so on all platforms, I'm at Launchpad CEO on all social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. You can find me, George Andriopoulos. Speakevent.com for speak, Launchpad516.com, or even just GeorgeAndriopoulos.com, and you can get to everything. I'm sure you guys will include that in your show notes.
We will. Show notes.
And now you give me a chance to try it again. Until then, stay curious and keep learning.
Thank you, boys.
Thanks.